All right, welcome to Talk of the Rock. I'm your host, Jared Griffin. Sorry about that. Technology malfunction, or I don't know. There's a gremlin or a bug in the wires somewhere. I don't know. Are they still called gremlins or not when technology things go a little awry? But we are here live talking to representatives from the Aleutic Museum. The Aleutic Museum, located near downtown Kodiak City, it's all abuzz with all sorts of activity. There are new books, new editions of books, new tutorials on beading, archaeological digs, free admission to the museum all month long, adding new exhibits and maybe possibly some planned renovations. And so anyway, there's no shortage of activity at the Aleutic Museum. So to help us talk about the Aleutic Museum, I have Nina Gron, yes, the gallery manager. Welcome.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And Patrick Saltonstall, the curator of archaeology. Welcome.
Hello.
All right. So let's just start off by talking about the organization you're representing here today. We have a lot of new folks on the island since we last spoke with the museum. So maybe I'll throw this over to Patrick, who's maybe been with the museum the longest. What is the museum?
Okay, that's putting me on the spot here. Well, the museum is sort of an outgrowth of the Exxon Valdez oil spill. You know, the Aleutic people have always kind of wanted a place to keep all the artifacts and things that came from digs and knowledge and a center for it. And with Evo's funding back in, I think it was like 1995, we got created. And our official name is Archaeological Repository. So that was, initially it was really to bring things back to Kodiak. So we brought all the artifacts, you know, that were excavated at Karluk, you know, all the digs that have gone on, all those things have come back to Kodiak and were housed at the museum. And since then, we've gone into language and, you know,
cultural revitalization.
Yes.
And
it's much more than just the place we keep artifacts.
Right.
But I still, that's sort of my forte. I'm the archaeologist. So I'm the curator of archaeology. So that's sort of my area in the museum.
Okay. And Nina, you kind of represent, you know, the other side of the museum, kind of the public face.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when you come into the museum for the month of December, we are offering free admission thanks to Mattson's sponsorship. But it's either myself up front or we have a museum assistant, Lori Walker, and then also Juna Davidson, who sits up at front. Sometimes, you know, when we need help and everyone's, you know, busy doing things. And so just coming in and saying hi and, you know, kind of give you the rundown of how to walk through the gallery. And also we have our store there too, that we have our Aleutic Museum merchandise. And then we also have, you know, consignment items from artists, not only around Kodiak, but throughout the state as well. And, you know, even some Aleutic artists that, you know, call Kodiak home, but are based in, you know, California or Washington.
So let's reiterate free admission through how long?
Till December 23rd.
Okay.
Yep.
Do you typically see an uptick when you see the free admission?
Yeah, I would say so. Last week we had, you know, I think it was help with the weather, with it being so windy and cold. So we had a bunch of visitors, but you know, the community likes to come and just take advantage of that, you know, why not?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So walk me through, how do you direct people through the gallery? What is in the gallery that you...
I'll start. So like normally if someone were to walk in, you know, we just tell them that they could walk through however they like, but we do have this display case. I can't remember the name, but that it shows, you know...
Cultures through time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the initial part, that's where you sort of learn who the Aleutic are and how... Am I still? I think did it come unplugged?
No, nope, you're good.
Okay, and Aleutic life ways through time, and then you kind of go into the gallery and you go into different aspects, mm-hmm, of who the Aleutic are.
Chronologically?
Is chronologically, but then it's like sort of celebration, mm-hmm, or you know, we have a plant lore exhibit now, but all that is changing. We are in the next couple of years going to be completely redoing everything.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about some of these really interesting archaeological projects. Where did you go this past summer?
This year, we did a lot of survey work. We surveyed the Kuprianov Peninsula for the state. We also did Vicota Bay for the refuge, and we surveyed the north shore of Kaluta Bay as well. We've been doing a lot of surveys the last few years, but we probably found about, I think, like 50 new archaeological sites. We learned quite a bit in those.
So what do you find? Yeah.
I was kind of impressed with how like different Vicota Bay is from Kaluta Bay. Way more sites in Kaluta Bay and much bigger villages there. It was quite the contrast between the two bays.
And are these just artifacts that you're finding, like tools? Or,
oh, no, we find whole villages. We find some villages with, like, more than 20 houses. More than 200 people would live in these villages. And actually, in Kaluta Bay, it was kind of cool, too, because we have old maps from, like, 1800. So we could actually go to these named villages that, you know, had an Aleutic name, and, you know, you'd see it on the map, and then you go there, and there it was. In reality,
yeah. That's really fascinating. How does the museum have a lot of these maps? I mean, are they accurate enough that you, as a scientist, can use them to pinpoint locations that you want to?
It's actually funny. They look pretty terrible when you look at them. You
know, I would imagine.
But once they're actually made by someone on the scene who was in a boat. So when you're there in a kayak or a boat yourself, you kind of like, the maps seem to make better sense actually. But I also love the accounts. Like Lisianski went to Kaluta Bay in like 1803, and he talks about talking to the chief of this village, and he said, "Oh, off on those rocks out there, there were people lived in those two rocks there." And we went up there, and there are villages up there too. Exactly, you know, all the accounts all kind of match up, and it's kind of neat to be on the landscape.
So when you find things like that, what do you do with it? What do you do with this information?
That's what we do all winter.
Okay. So
we write up the reports. So I've been doing a lot of report writing. Okay. Like we wrote up we already handed that one in, the Kaluta Bay report. We write site descriptions of every site we find, and we put them all on the map, and then we go into the historical research, and then we sort of summarize what we find, and then we put down recommendations to the land managers about, you know, sort of how to take care of the sites.
Oh, okay. So over time, let's try to connect the two. Over time, how does the information you get, does it ever make its way into the gallery?
It does. But I'd say more, a lot of that, the survey stuff does, but more of our excavations get into the gallery. Like we've been doing a lot of digs for Koniag Inc. lately, when we excavated a ceremonial house. And I could totally see that going into all that stuff will go right into the new exhibits. We did I get all confused by the years. But we did some excavations at Bruin Point last year for Koniag of like a 5,000-year-old sort of hunting camp. And then we also excavated more at Karlick Lake, where we actually dug a normal house, because last year we dug a Kaskig or a ceremonial house. And it was kind of neat. We wanted to contrast the two. Sort of like, this is a house that people live in, and these are the types of tools you find in a house that people live in, and this is a house where people are doing ceremonies and dancing, and you find different types of art. Like, you don't find ulus. And that sort of stuff goes right into books, goes right into the exhibits. It's kind of rewarding being an archaeologist, like, at the Aleutic Museum, as opposed to when I was, you know, at grad school, because at grad school, you kind of like, why am I doing this? What does it mean? It's just like finding arrowheads, you know?
Right.
But here, it's like you get to see it, like get right into the exhibits, right into the books, and people are excited by it.
How big of a staff do you have to help you with this?
I think we're 14 now, aren't we?
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's toss it back over to the gallery side. Okay. So we're really excited about new archaeological things, but what about some new things coming up? What do you have up this winter?
Okay. So we're super excited to get back to our holiday bazaar. We haven't been able to do like a traditional, you know, with a bunch of people since 2019. Mm-hmm. 2020, we had one planned, but it had to get canceled. And then for 2021, you know, just with, following CDC guidelines and recommendations, we did a featured artist series. And so that was over a period of a couple Saturdays with only two, you know, just to do the social distancing. But on this Saturday, December 17th, we're back to our normal holiday bazaar. We'll have 9 artists there in the gallery, and that's going to be from 10 to 4. artists that will be there is Bruce Nelson, Fine Arts by Hannah Scholl, Heritage Furs by Suzanne Malutin, Gayla Peterson, Jerry Cobbin Kanagan Photography, Michelle George Ash, the Native Village of Afognak, Sophie Fretz, and Stacy Studebaker. So it'll be excited. Exciting. I'm excited. Yeah.
It's been really neat about interviewing a lot of our organizations over the past couple of months is heading into this dark winter season. Things are feel like we're opening back up and we can kind of get back to that community feeling again. Are these these items by these artists will be for display or for sale?
Oh, for sale. So you can come down to the gallery and purchase directly from the artists, you know. So 9 tables, you know, throughout the gallery, and then, you know, our store will be open as well. So, and that again is going to be Saturday, December 17th, okay, from 10 to 4. You know, and then also along with that, for the month, we've extended our Saturday hours. Normally, we're only open from noon to 4, but with holiday shopping, on Saturdays, we're open from 10 to 4 now.
So what are, if I can ask, this might be anecdotal, but what are some of your biggest sellers? What kind of items do people really like to come in?
No, jewelry, earrings, okay, you know, everyone comes in. I have a birthday coming up, or, you know, anniversary, and it's like, oh, or I just want to buy myself something special, and, you know, they'll look around, but then it's like, okay, can I look at these earrings? Can I look at these earrings? We do get a lot of people that come in and buy our fur items that we have too.
Okay.
Yep. And then a lot of people have, like, that order online, do the, you know, books and Aleutic merchandise, you know, we have blankets, mugs. Yeah, sweaters, shirts. So we have something for everybody.
I know, I was about to say.
Yeah.
If you just sold milk and eggs, yeah, it would just, you know, one stop shop. Another question off the top. If you can talk about some of the books that you saw. I'm a book nerd. That's what I do. So I know that there is a new recently revised edition of, is it the Aleutic Traditions,
yeah,
book? And then a new children's book.
Mm-hmm.
Or activity book.
Yeah, the activity book. Yeah. So the activity book was released this year, or, you know, just recently. It's 63 pages of just, you know, coloring, word puzzles, mazes, you know, like start to finish.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, mazes. And so that was developed by museum staff with contributions from Aleutic artists. And then was supported by the Monoctic Project along with the Alaska State Council of Arts. And then it is illustrated by David Tucker. He's a local artist here. I know he's an Aleutic dancer. So it's always nice that the museum partners with, you know, local artists here. So,
mm-hmm,
yeah. And you can buy them. They're $12 per book. And so you come on down to the gallery, buy them then, or you can, you know, buy them online.
I'm really glad to see it. When I first moved here 15, 16 years ago, I think the museum had a smaller kind of more kind of coloring book. And this is much. This is,
yeah,
it's really cool. I've looked at it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think with that one, it was, you know, super popular. But like you said, it was really small. And, you know, just the demand with, you know, like, education, language, you know, everything that the museum does is all fit in there for, mm-hmm, for your little one. Yeah.
And can you talk about the next one? Yeah, the traditions,
yeah,
book. There's some really cool new things in there.
Yeah, and so for the Aleutic Traditions book, this is our fourth edition. And this was supported by grants from the Institute of Museum and Library Services and the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council. With this fourth edition, there are 13 new lessons. Some include on fishing. There's a page on healers and shamans, and then a discussion on naming practices. So that's exciting. I haven't had a chance to, like, fully look through it myself, but it's nice. And then these are for sale for $15 per copy.
And these are books that you can anybody can buy and kind of go through it themselves. This isn't like a textbook for a class or workshop or anything.
Yeah,
this is...
mostly like if you know your normal or your typical questions about you know the Aleutic people and things like that. So like a good example is when I had first started, it was like, here's a traditions book, read it, because you'll get a lot, you know, a lot of people will ask you questions that you can answer from the book.
Yeah. And so, Patrick, how does the work that you do end up in these, like, really cool, you know, very accessible...
Well, it's funny you mentioned the textbook, because we actually are writing a textbook right now.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's with the IMLS funding, and we're writing an Aleutic history book.
And IMLS, that's the Museum and Library
Services. Yep. But when you say textbook, you said it's sort of in a pejorative way. We're trying to make it so that it's actually readable.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So it's going to be something that's going to be geared to the ninth grade level.
Okay.
And as an archaeologist, I actually kind of like these things better myself. You know, everybody thinks archaeologists can read them better, but boring textbooks put archaeologists to sleep too. So you know,
English majors too. It's, yeah.
And it's funny, we did another we did a project where we took a dig once and turned it into a children's book as well. Alicia Drabeck wrote the story, you know, Iksani's Hook.
Right.
And I kinda think those are the way we get our archaeological data out to the public, mm-hmm. you know. And I think
And the museum partners in many different ways on the science side. What other kinds of academic or scientific organizations do you partner with, or is this kind of a pretty niche?
We do put things out for other archaeologists. Like we're writing the BIA had we did a lot mm-hmm. of study of petroglyphs recently. It's petroglyph
right.
surveys, and we're writing an article on that right now that we'll put in a journal. It will go into a scientific journal for other archaeologists. But still, we're trying to write that very accessible style so that you could read it, anyone could read it, and they get something out of it. But that one's geared towards, you know, other archaeologists.
Okay. A lot of this is just great. There's just so many things. So let's talk about the future, or not necessarily the future, but what's on the horizon for the museum. And I know you may not be able to speak too much about this, but the executive director, April Lectone, and counselor had mentioned in a recent newsletter that there are renovations, perhaps, or the planning of renovations coming down the line.
Renovations are going to happen, for sure. But I don't really know how it's going to happen or what's going to happen. We do have Kristen is working on all that. She's a new employee at the Aleutic Museum, and she's sort of spearheading the whole thing.
Yep.
I know the exhibits are all going to get redone. You know, we are going to be doing a lot of moving around, that's about all I can say.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, for, you know, moving our, you know, new things within the coming year, this past year, along with, you know, with the activity book and the traditions book, the museum partnered with Kayla McDermott to create the Nechak headdress booklet. And along with that, there are four tutorial videos on our website that you can follow, you know, the videos along with the booklet. And that was funded by a grant that the Shunack Tribe of Kodiak applied for through BIA. And so that's exciting. And those are, so with that, the booklet, we have that out. And we did a workshop this last November where we had 60 people apply for 16 spots.
Wow.
So because there was such a high demand, we have, you know, found funding to do, you know, one or two more workshops in 2023.
And do you find that many non-natives are as interested in beading as natives?
Yeah, yeah. So we have a limited supply in our gallery for the local community to come get a free copy of that. And I want to say when, you know, we first put them out on the table, a lot of them flew off. And then it kind of settled down just because with the nice weather before winter hit, you know, people weren't coming into the gallery. But now since with the free admission, you know, kind of cold, windy weather, they're starting to go off the table a lot quicker. And then something to look forward. In January, we are going to celebrate Russian Christmas, and that's going to be January 7th. And for celebrating that is Starring. And so the gallery will be open. Normally the Starring will start at 7, and, you know, they'll have carol songs and Slavonic, Aleutic, and Yupik.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. And, yeah, Russian Christmas is on a Saturday this year.
Yep, so it works out perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, anybody can. You don't have to be Russian.
No,
you don't have to be.
Yeah, if you want to just come and participate and see, you know, one of those traditional aspects of Aleutic culture, you know, it'll be down there at the mm-hmm. gallery.
Awesome. Okay, so this is where I get to my like pie in the sky section of the show when I talk to local organizations. So, pie in the sky. You're not limited by, you know, resources or money or time in your capacity at the museum. We'll start with Patrick. I mean, what would be your dream like archaeological dig around here?
Well, I've been doing them.
Okay.
And in fact, we've had too much work. It's kind of almost like oh, but that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
It's a good place to be in. I actually, a couple of years ago, if you'd asked me about my dream excavation, I would have said that big Kaskig at Karlik Lake.
So okay.
I got to do my dream excavation.
That's awesome.
Not often can you say that.
Yeah.
And we all get to write it all up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna go outside the bounds of the theme today and ask you. Okay, so off island, do you have a dream archaeological dig?
Okay, now see, I was just in Arizona and I was looking at archaeology there and like I knew nothing. So it's sort of like I'm geared to like the North Pacific. You know, mm-hmm. Kodiak Island, maritime archaeology. So, yeah, Kodiak, I guess I could go to the Alaska Peninsula. But no, I don't really have an urge to dig elsewhere.
Okay, no, that's great. And so, Nina, go ahead and talk about your history. How did you get, and I'll ask you your pie in the sky dream too, but you're kind of new to the museum.
Yeah, I started.
But not new to Kodiak.
Yeah,
but.
I've been at the museum since March of this year. So it's exciting. I like it. I used to work for Native Village of Afognak, and then I had went over to Koniag, and I just missed, you know, the kind of community aspect, you know, seeing everyone's face. That's the one thing I love about my job is when people come in, you know, I'm a people person, so I get to talk to them and see them, and then along with that, and then working with artists, you know, I love doing that. So,
what do you see on the horizons or your pie in the sky thing for? for yourself at the museum or for, I mean, what does your dream gallery look like?
Just, I would say large, you know, and like, so the gallery just large, you know, we have so much at the museum to offer and, you know, we only just get a little slice of it. So if it could be like bigger than what is already.
Okay, so space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it is funny you talk about that because we have been doing, you know, with the renovations, it's an amazing chance. We're redoing all of our exhibits. Mm-hmm. So one thing we did, we got some community input and heard what community wants, but we've also been like, you know, that piece always should be on display. Like I've been doing that lately with Alex, our exhibits coordinator. And we've been like, sort of like, you know, this would be a great piece here. Mm. And like we, you know, like today we found a little rock that was incised with circles. It's just like the petroglyphs we've been finding. So we're like, oh, we could put that in the exhibit with the petroglyphs, and it's like it would match.
Yeah.
So it is we're kind of getting our dream gallery now.
Okay. Yeah.
Getting a chance. Of course, in 30 years, we'll be like, why didn't we put that piece in?
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, right now we have that opportunity.
Are there opportunities for the public to come in and look at things that the museum has that aren't out there on display?
People need to set them up in advance, but mm-hmm. I give lots of tours in the back and show. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I think when my kids went, I mean, this was probably 13, 14 years ago, maybe, when they went and toured, and it was a great time. We have about a minute or two left. So, talk to me about how people interested in supporting the mission of the Lutzik Museum. How can we support both the science side and then, I don't want to say the fun side, but you know, the cultural side, or you know, the cultural language revitalization sides.
Yeah, so you can sign up for a membership. You know, we have different levels of membership. And then also just making a donation. If you wanted to make a donation, you can do that on our website. You can come down to the gallery and do it right then. Or, you know, and same with, you know, signing up for a membership. We have the online option or down in the gallery. Or, you know, we can even do it over the phone if you wanted to as well.
I have to re-up my membership, actually. I've been meaning to do that. I'm going to do it.
And over on the science side, I guess you already kind of get your funding from grants, or how
a lot of them are grants. Like, we get National Park Service, Tribal Enhancement. BIA is very good. We've been getting a lot of help from the Fish and Wildlife Service. We do a lot, mostly grant, IMLS.
Okay.
I'm forgetting a ton. EVOS. A lot of EVOS built us, and EVOS is still helping us.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be around for a while, for sure. Okay, well, I think that just about does it for Talk of the Rock this week. See, that went by pretty fast. Thank you to my guests, Nina Gron, the gallery manager at the Lutzik Museum, and Patrick Saltonstall, curator of archaeology. Thanks for very rich discussion about what's going on at the museum.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having us.
And thanks for listening.